Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Our post-election program is underway on the Media Project, an opportunity for us to do some analysis and perhaps even some thought cleansing on the part of the media after the election of a new president. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston.
Hello. Sir? I've been told that I need some cleansing, but I'm not sure it was thought cleansing.
And Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, professor emeritus and all that kind of stuff. Are you there?
Did you hear that, Alan?
Into the microphone.
Hello, hello.
You know that Alan correctly predicted the result of the election.
I did.
Oh, is that right?
Yes,
that
he did.
Correct.
I thought I'd tell you before he does.
I see. It's hard to tell because he's on every side of every issue, just like Donald Trump. So, you know.
There's no reason to take an act. There's no reason to take an
attitude. I said, Alan says.
There's no
reason. I always told you.
There's no reason to take an attitude just because you guys got it wrong. And I'm telling you now that I did. And I've been doing it for months. Because
you did what?
I correctly call this election, and I'm going to tell you.
Oh,
why.
Give me a break.
I did.
Go back to the tape.
Yeah, I'll go back to the tape.
Well, just because you every now and then would say, oh, it's going to be very close. It's going to be very close.
No,
everybody.
No, that's
did.
What you would say.
That's not
what I said.
You said Donald Trump's going to win?
I said so because I thought what happened. I said so, and there's a lot of confirmation of that. And I'll tell you why. Because there are people who were polled who will not say what they're going to do, number one, yeah. Or they don't answer pollsters, or they won't tell their mother, I've always said, and they won't tell their priest, and they won't tell their rabbi, but they go in there, and in a mark of defiance, they do what they did in this election. I was right. Sorry, Rex, you can't pull it out.
You know, when I was writing sports many, many years ago, I had a football selection column. And each week I'd select several games, and almost always each week I would pick one completely opposite the way everybody thought it was going to go. And, of course, most of the time I was wrong. But on the weeks that I got it right, I got that one right.
You guys can eat your hearts out. But
I don't think we will.
But the facts are the facts.
Yeah, okay, whatever,
In the meantime, every single newspaper in America, minus the Las Vegas newspaper,
Review Journal,
went ahead and endorsed Hillary Clinton, and forcefully. What does that mean to the press right now?
Well, first of all, it wasn't a prediction. People always confuse.
No, that was not a prediction.
No,
right.
Endorsements are not predictions.
They got it wrong, too.
Yeah, well.
No, they didn't get it wrong. They expressed their point of view. You expressed your point of view, too. You said you supported Hillary Clinton. And so if you want to say the press got it wrong, then you would say you got it wrong. Expressing a point of view, this is what I was saying, is not the same thing as making a prediction. Right?
No.
So these newspapers all express their opinion quite forcefully.
Yes. Rex, will you just please stop attacking
me?
Well, this is
preposterous.
What's preposterous?
Well, I sat here and listened to you every week, and I've never heard you say, well, Donald Trump's going to win this election.
Let me tell you right now, I did, and no matter how smug
I have to confirm, I've been in the studio and on the air when he said that.
Really?
Yes.
So, I'm amazed. I must have missed it. No, I kind of know how I ever missed anything Alan has said, but no. I'll listen to it.
But I think that the more important question, not that your question about the endorsements is unimportant, but I think there's a much more important question about how the press covered this thing and whether or not the press deserves to be beating up on itself as it is. I happen to think that there's some beating up that is required, but not nearly as much as we're now hearing. And I also think it's more than ever important when we talk about media fail, and that seems to be the headlines, that we separate again the print press, the broadcast press, and now the social media before we talk about who and what failed in this election.
I don't see what the media fail was at all. I think there is a very important effort by the serious news media in this country to try to provide factual reporting in an environment where an awful lot of voters didn't care about the facts.
I think that the media failed in this way for decades, and I thought that had gotten past this. There was criticism from inside and outside the media about horse race coverage, and about the coverage was based more on what the polls said, even if the polls were right, than what the issues are. So I think, again, this year there was too much reliance on polls in the coverage and in making conclusions about how the election was likely to go when it turned out that the polls were not entirely accurate. But I think more importantly, most of the big press, I'm not talking about smaller newspapers and I'm not talking about broadcast, that most of the big press did not have a good enough sense of what was going on in the country outside of the big cities, outside of their own circles. In part, I believe, because they didn't have enough people to go out into the country and knock on doors and look at the lawn signs and recognize that there was this groundswell for Trump in places that they didn't expect it to be.
But again, that's horse race coverage. So you're saying the media didn't know that the people were going to support Trump, but that isn't the same thing as saying that they failed to adequately cover him in the sense of, to the extent that they could even figure out what his policy
was. I think that the big papers did a good job, actually, covering the issue. And I mean, I could make an argument that they didn't cover Clinton enough. There wasn't enough about the Clinton Foundation. But I think that by the end of this election, if you read the big papers, you knew pretty much who Trump was.
Now, the other thing that is of interest to me here is that the establishment was the target of Trump. Trump, no matter how hypocritical it was, made a lot of bones going after the establishment. And I think to some degree, the newspapers have been perceived, because he attacked the media constantly, as part of that establishment.
I think that this is one time that I would agree if people said reporters approached the coverage of Trump with a point of view, and it wasn't so much the point of view based on ideology, foreign policy, government, immigration. I think that he was such a vociferous, nasty critic of the press, calling them scum, calling them liars, creating circumstances at his rallies where reporters felt threatened, that the reporters did not want to see this guy elected.
I don't know that that's why there was hostility on the part of the press to Donald Trump. I agree with you that that was the case. But, you know, journalists are self-selected. We become journalists because we want to, and most journalists are, it's true, politically progressive. And most of them also respect folks who read and write well. Trump seemingly does not read. He says he doesn't read. He is not articulate in the sense of articulating his point of view on issues in a way that we as journalists respect. So I think there was hostility on the part of reporters to the belief that somebody like that could actually succeed because he's not like us. And that's a mistake on the part of the media. We're kind of elitist these days, you know, because we believe in books and policy discussion and stuff like that. We can't believe that actually somebody who stands against science, Donald Trump, is a denier of climate change. That should be respected, because in journalism, we respect facts. So I think there is a hostility to that point of view on the part of journalists. That's true. But I think they bent over backwards to be fair to the guy, honestly.
Well, you know, Rex, you make a couple of good points, unusually good points there. And one of them is that he has to be judged by his actions. So, for example, if he, as is reported, appoints somebody who is a denier of climate change to head the EPA of all, you know, Environmental Protection Administration of all things, then it is up to the newspapers to give you the background on the person that he appointed, to tell you exactly what the implications of that appointment will be. But how they do that, how they do it, becomes very important.
Yeah.
I agree with Rex generally, but I think that the difference between the Trump coverage and coverage of past politicians with whom the reporters might disagree is that the reporters were never the subject of the vitriol themselves. And I believe, whether it was subtle or not, there was an attempt to cover this guy in such a way, or to suggest in such a way, that this guy couldn't win, and more than that, shouldn't win, because of their own self-interest in this case. I mean, what Alan was just saying, going forward, when the press is covering an EPA nominee who is a climate change denier, Trump has laid the groundwork now for at least 50% or more of this country to disbelieve whatever it is the press is going to write or say about these people. That we are now in a fact-free era. It's the wild, wild west of factum. I heard, I think it was Jeff Greenfield the other day, who said there had been a scientific study had come out saying, and an easy one to disprove, that last year was the hottest year on record.
Right.
People were denying that that was the case. No, that can't be right. I mean, it wasn't saying it was the hottest year on record because of climate change or coal or humans.
It's just that it was the hottest year.
And they were denying even that. Just the basic fact.
So my point
is, going forward, if we report on the nominee for the EPA and we say so-and-so is anti-climate change, is this all factually based? So I don't believe it.
Isn't, and you know, one of the questions that has to be raised is the extent to which we in the media don't hold the reins anymore, of course, on the information. Facebook does. There ought to be some conversation going forward about the responsibility of Facebook to not be just a neutral carrier of information, but Facebook ought to concede that it is, in fact, a news medium. There is no effort on the part of Facebook to do anything about fake news, stuff that presents itself as news that is not true. When you're as powerful as Facebook is, when you claim, no, our algorithms are absolutely neutral, that is not, in fact, the case. Algorithms are designed by humans. Facebook has a responsibility to face up to its power and to use its power a little bit more judiciously so that people, to help people recognize the difference. Not that all journalists have to agree with my point of view, but there is a difference between fact and fiction.
Okay, all right. So let me tell you, I've been sitting across the microphones with you for many years now.
Many years. And my wife says perhaps my relationship with you is almost as long as my relationship with her. It's
perhaps too long.
It's tragic.
So my question is this. If we were speaking right now about so-called press councils who would, you know, basically censor the news and say, that's out of line, you shouldn't have said that, you'd be the first guy on the barricade saying, no, sir, nonsense. We don't expect that to happen. We don't want that to happen. But here you are, and you're a little suspect, my friend, because Facebook is your competitor, and you know it. And now you're saying Facebook ought to face up to their responsibilities and basically have somebody who says, you know, this is right or this is wrong.
But he's not suggesting that an outside arbiter make that determination.
Well, somebody's got to do it.
Well, the point is that today and every day and every year, media organizations have councils and think tanks among themselves where they discuss those issues, and they, in effect, self-police themselves or not. I mean, what makes it more difficult today, let's just say for the sake of argument, that 100 top journalists, including Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, get together and Zuckerberg is persuaded to do exactly what Rex is recommending. But in today's age, social media, who's going to say to Twitter, you know, I can tweet something tomorrow and say Alan Chartok wears army boots, and it's out there before anybody has a chance to change it.
Army boots.
I wear army boots for a nice snowplow.
But somebody else will do it if Facebook doesn't do it.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. But he's not talking about an outside government or some intervention board to come in and dictate.
We're talking about Facebook as a publisher being responsible for what it publishes.
Well, yes,
the same
no.
way we're responsible for what
yes
we publish.
Yes and no. I don't really know enough about Facebook. All I know is I'm on it. I love it. And basically, I disallow everybody except my kids and my wife and Ira.
Yes, I'm on it, and I have too many pictures of Murray.
Yeah. to do it. So how do you really say that this thing could even internally be policed so that non-factual material would be corrected? No, Rex, I think you're dead wrong on this.
No, in the same way that we in the Times Union try to internally police the content that we publish.
We should.
Yeah. And I think that Facebook has no less responsibility to make some careful consideration for what it publishes. It is so powerful now.
But there are billions of people, Rex, who are using Facebook every day. How are they going to do that?
Well, there are actually ways that you can shape the algorithm, I believe, to make make it more thoughtful.
I'd love to know what they are.
I would, too. I'm not a good enough scientist to know that. Well, I'm not a scientist at all. I just, you know. But I do think that there is some responsibility there for when it is the biggest carrier of information in the world, for us to take a look at it and say, who is going to exercise responsibility to try to make sure that, we aren't don't live in a fact-free environment if a publisher doesn't? And Facebook is, in fact, a publisher now. It's not that they're so much our competitor. They are our carrier. They publish our content, and they publish an awful lot of stuff.
But come on, Rex, let's fess up. They are eating your lunch in terms of advertising and other things, aren't they? So that makes them your competitor.
They're both. Yes, that's correct. They're both. You know, where the media did fail, and it does have to do with this somewhat, we are not adequately able to do storytelling to reach a lot of the Trump voters. People who used to read newspapers no longer do, and therefore they're not informed. Now, I don't know if that means that we need to do a better job of storytelling digitally or in 140 character bytes. Perhaps that's the case. But it does trouble me greatly that we have such a huge percentage of voters in the country who don't care about facts. And I do wonder if that is a journalism failure or if that is an education failure. And I'm not just saying they don't care about facts because they didn't vote for a particular candidate, but when material is presented that we have tried to thoughtfully distribute and people say, no, that's not true, I worry about what we're doing wrong in that regard.
There's a lot of anger out there. Let me just say there's a lot of anger out there. I had to be over here at public radio most of the night, the election night, and my wife was getting telephone calls from people, waking her up at 2:30 in the morning, say, you tell Shattuck, you tell him, you know, that Donald Trump has just become the president of the United States of America. 2:30 in the morning.
You mean these are Trump supporters who
yes,
are angry?
Yes, I believe so. Mm-hmm. I believe so. And yeah. Can you leave a name? No. This is the kind of stuff that I think we're going to be seeing more and more of.
Yeah. And of course, as Ira points out, with him targeting the media, will be interesting to see what happens going forward. Because a White House typically relies upon press coverage. You know, every president comes to depend upon the press corps that is there to convey information. Is this White House, is the Trump White House going to be so hostile to the media going forward, or is there going to be some change there?
Good question.
And we don't really know what's going to happen because we don't really know what he stands for other than draining the swamp.
But there is going to be a lot of opportunities here for really good investigative reporting. One which is very much on the top of my mind is that Rudy Giuliani is now going to be the Attorney General of the United States. Rudy Giuliani...
We don't know that.
Well, he was appointed...
We should write this down since Alan goes by his predictions. Yeah, no. Okay, Alan says that he's going to be...
It's widely considered. Has he said so since?
Yeah, Trump has said so. And by the way, I'm going to hold you to that, Rex, and you can kiss my shoes. Okay.
His army boots.
His army boots.
Okay, but here's a great story. Giuliani was a big admirer of a man named Bernard Kerik. We'll all remember him. First he was the prisons guy, then he was the police commissioner. Then Giuliani nominated him with the Bush administration to be the head of Homeland Security.
Correct.
And then he was arrested and sent to prison.
Right.
Now, there is a story, obviously, that somebody's going to have to connect. As he approaches his new august office, what's he going to be like having made a decision that was that terrible?
Do you think anybody cares about that anymore? I don't. I mean, I think that what this election has showed is that most people don't care about such things because look at all that was reported about Donald Trump that voters
didn't care
about.
You've given up already. You're a cynic and you have given up already.
But it's hard not to draw that conclusion when you see that they're in a campaign. The reporters and fact checkers showed that 2/3 or more of the time Trump's statements are lies, that the man is a serial liar, that the man is a sexual predator, and on and on and on. And nevertheless, he is now the president-elect.
I've been thinking about that. What does that tell you about the white male group that voted for him? I mean, the last time I looked, and it certainly is less now, there was several million people who bought penthouses. Every week, right? Several million bought Penthouse every time it came out.
Oh, the magazine.
Yeah, Penthouse, the magazine, right. So when he says that's locker room talk or I really didn't do those things, he's got a lot of people who say, yeah, me neither.
But that's to Rex's point that Bernard Carrick is just another blip and a shrug of the shoulders if he's somehow connected. We know he's connected to Giuliani. I mean, who's not to say that Bernard Carrick won't be part of the cabinet at some way down the line? But
I think there's a significant part of the electorate that is simply fed up with the elite and identifies mainstream media as elite. And to a certain extent, there is some truth to that, because what has happened over the years, the ranks of reporters have become filled with people who know how to write and were pretty good students. And that is not necessarily the crew that really Donald Trump sought to appeal to.
I'm worried about you, Rex. I think you're already beginning to sound like an apologist for the Trump people.
I just called them stupid.
Well, you know, anyway, you've often said
that. I don't remember that.
You've often said that Rex wants to be the editor of the New York Times, and since the New York Times, according to Trump, is failing and is going to go out of business soon, Rex wants to get a job with Breitbart.
Dear Media Project, I was listening to President Obama's weekly message last weekend. This would be before the election. And I was surprised to hear the Republican response was an unabashed political campaign commercial from Donald Trump. I thought NPR was playing a campaign ad. What are the panel's thoughts on whether or not NPR should have played the message as the Republican response?
Well, it turns out, I think, to be honest with you, because I did look into that at some length, that NPR is not the disseminator, that it is tradition that individual radio stations, if they want it, go to the Democrats, get their person, and then the Republicans pick their own person.
Mm-hmm.
And they picked Donald Trump that day. Did I like it? No. Was I unhappy about it? I was unhappy about it. And I heard from two or three people who thought that it was really wrong and electioneering. And, you know, I didn't like it. But we did it, and I think we have to own up to it.
You either accept the fact that there's a White House weekly address and a response, or you don't.
That's,
and so in the interest
right.
of fairness, they get to say what they want to, and the White House gets to say what it wants
indeed,
to.
Rex.
Okay, then.
That's unusually charitable. Well,
thank you, sir. Thank you. Thanks to Jay for that note. Here's another note from Mike, who says, when watching television news networks, the cable networks, they frequently have a surrogate for a candidate on a panel, but they will also get a title on the bottom third, additionally identifying them as a political correspondent for the network. So what would be the typical pay to have a surrogate live in the studio green room?
Well, see, I don't have any idea.
Well, I think that's the other end of this whole question about media fail. Now let's get away from the press and talk about the cable news networks, which I believe have a disproportionate impact on what the country thinks and how much time is spent on these panels with these surrogates. I mean, I think the scariest words on CNN every night are, now let's turn to our panel.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more.
And so I think that there is a distinction between, I believe the surrogates are not paid. They are, in effect, we couldn't get Donald Trump, but we're going to get Corey Lewandowski.
No, Corey Lewandowski is paid by CNN.
I'm sorry, he may not be a good example. If in fact, he gets a line that says CNN correspondent.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
But you have people like the two blonde women, what's her name, Scotty and Callie. I believe they're surrogates. I'm not sure about Van Jones, who I think is quite good. But there are several, and I don't believe the surrogates are paid. But be that as it may, that back and forth every night, I just think it has done a tremendous disservice to the dialogue, to the discourse in this country. It piggybacks on the discourse that's already started going downhill with talk radio folks like Limbaugh, and then talk TV people like
what's
Hannity.
What's the difference? What's the difference between that and the chattering on WAMC? You know, the roundtable.
I'm glad you asked, because I think about that, and I think that the dialogue on WAMC is a little bit more even-keeled, a little bit more academic.
And we take phone calls and letters from people who disagree with us violently sometimes. So that's a very different thing than what you see on CNN. What are they doing, reading letters or hearing from people with disagreements? We read every letter we get, or most of them we read.
You know, I don't know what Marshall McLuhan would say about a CNN panel when you have so many people on the screen that you better have a widescreen TV, else I guess a couple of them will fall off on either side. but you have basically the equal number from representing both sides, and one side might say tomorrow is Thursday, and the other side will say, no, let's talk about that because I think it may be Friday.
Well, that's right. And you know what? If you're the head of CNN or if you're the head of news director at CNN, you would say, we're doing our jobs. We're putting one from one side down here. We're putting one from the other side over here.
And we're way out of time.
We're out of time. So that's, I mean, this listener who says, please make the media project longer. It should be at least an hour, but we don't
know. Well, everybody knows, Rex, you're the one who stands in the way because you're so important.
Yeah, but when I'm on, I talk too much.
We got to go.
Not at all.
We got to go. Thanks, folks, for joining us. Ira Fussfeld, Alan Chartok, and Rex Smith on the Media Project.
Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.